You're listening to a forum on the Free Trade Area of the Americas on WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, or WXXC Truxton. This is Unwelcome Guests.
Un autre groupe est un groupe de jeunes marginaux qui y a des affiliations un peu partout dans le monde, qui s'appelle De la bouffe, pas des bombes.
The other group is a group of young marginalized people, quote unquote, which has affiliations all over the world because it's a group called Food Not Bombs.
C'est des jeunes qui distribuaient de la nourriture végétarienne dans les parcs la fin de semaine sur des principes naturellement très non-violents qui favorisaient justement l'autogestion.
A group that serves food, serve food in city parks on the basis of various principles such as non-violence and autogestion, which is self-management or self-activity.
Qu'est-ce qui est triste un peu avec ces jeunes marginaux à Québec lors d'une fête nationale, je ne me rappelle plus exactement l'année, mais il y a eu une émeute et les policiers qui se sont fait surprendre parce que l'émeute était en grande partie de leur responsabilité, cherchaient des boucs émissaires et ce groupe a été ciblé comme étant la cause de ces émeutes.
And unfortunately, during the national holiday in Quebec a few years ago, I don't remember the year, there were riots in Quebec City during this national holiday, and the authorities searched out scapegoats, and one of the scapegoats they found was this group Food Not Bombs.
La seule cause qu'ils ont pu trouver pour essayer de faire des liens, puis ils n'ont jamais trouvé un lien direct, c'était des quelques journaux anarchistes et 10 plants de potes, dont 7 en réalité étaient des plants de tomates.
And the only cause that the authorities had at the time, because there wasn't really any cause for this, was eventually finding a few anarchist newspapers and a few pot plants in their house. And c'est quoi la dernière chose, les tomates? A bunch of so-called pot plants, of which 8 of the 10 of them were actually tomato plants. So, just 2 pot plants.
Et au Québec, généralement, les autorités sont pas très répressives sur le fait d'avoir 3 plants de potes à la maison. Mais étant donné que c'était des jeunes marginaux, puis qu'il y avait peut-être une association avec les émeutes, ils ont eu le droit à 3 mois de prison et 1 an de probation.
And generally in Quebec, you know, they don't deal too seriously with having a couple of pot plants at your house. But seeing that these were young, marginalized youth, and seeing that they wanted to make a connection with the riots, these people got 3 months in prison and 1 year probation.
Un troisième groupe qui est plus récent un peu, c'est la Coalition Orange, qui est un groupe d'individus à l'Université Laval.
Another group, which is a more recent group, another youth student group, is called the Coalition Orange, the Orange Coalition, which is based at the University of Laval in Quebec City.
Et c'est un groupe d'étudiants justement qui s'est formé en réaction aux coupures dans le budget de l'université.
It's a group that came together in reaction to cutbacks to university funding.
Grossièrement, ils ont fait des actions justement pour demander un meilleur financement de la bibliothèque, organiser des bed-ins ou un bed-in où il y avait des teach-ins où on pouvait discuter de différentes alternatives.
They demanded things like better funding for the library and also organized teach-ins and what have you. On these issues.
Et l'an dernier, on a connu quelque chose de nouveau qui n'était pas très connu au Québec et au Canada, peu connu au Québec à tout le moins, des fameuses ententes d'exclusivité entre une des grandes compagnies de liqueur et l'université, Pepsi ou Coke.
And last year, we had something that's not too common in Canada, or at least in Quebec, and that is the negotiation of an exclusivity contract with a beverage soft drink company, you know, Pepsi or Coke.
Et justement, donc il y a eu une grande mobilisation pour premièrement demander une consultation des étudiants sur cette issue.
And so there was a large mobilization to try to get student input on this issue.
Et justement aussi questionner toute cette notion de financement corporatif de l'éducation.
And also to put into question all this corporate funding of education.
Parce qu'au Québec, majoritairement, l'éducation est financée par le gouvernement.
Because in Quebec, education is for the most part funded by the government.
C'est une lutte concrète qui a été gagnée justement car il n'y a pas d'entente à l'Université Laval entre l'université et un quelconque pétilleur.
And this is a struggle where there was a clear victory because in the end there was never a beverage contract with either Coke or Pepsi.
Alors c'est un peu de tous ces groupes-là qui ont formé la CASA et d'autres personnes parce qu'il ne faut pas limiter à juste ces personnes.
So it's people who have been involved in these kind of struggles or groups that that ended up forming CASA, not just these groups, but you know people like in those kind of struggles.
Ils ont formé la CASA. Ben, on a formé la CASA sur le principe justement de la démocratie directe.
So we put CASA together. On the principle of direct democracy.
Une vision antipatriarcale.
A vision of anti-patriarchy.
Anti-autoritaire, anti-hiérarchique.
Anti-authoritarian, anti-hierarchical.
Et surtout anti-capitaliste.
And especially anti-capitalist.
maintenant, je vais très rapidement. I'm sorry. je vais vous parler un peu de ce qui se passe à Québec, parce qu'on parle justement de... Il y a eu la méthode Seattle, où les autorités n'étaient pas prêtes à faire face à un type d'événement comme tel.
So now, really quickly, I'm going to talk about what's happening in Quebec, because we have the Seattle method, which is when the authorities weren't ready for what's going to happen.
Prochainement la méthode Qatar, aller le plus loin possible dans le désert pour tenir le prochain congrès de l'OMC.
And now we have the Qatar method, which is to go as far as possible into the desert to have these conferences. Qatar is the site of the next World Trade Organization meeting.
Et il y a la méthode Québec, qui est la méthode où malheureusement on avait déjà prévu le sommet avant Seattle.
And also we have the Quebec method, which unfortunately was decided to have the meeting in Quebec before Seattle happened.
Alors, on peut voir ce qu'on pourrait appeler justement beaucoup de mesures de sécurité en quantité industrielle.
And we see lots of security measures in industrial strength security measures. That would be the translation. We're seeing a lot of industrial strength security measures.
Une des premières choses qu'on a vues, je vais vous en lancer beaucoup en peu de temps. Ici, on a un nouveau mur. La ville de Québec a des murailles anciennes, mais ici, un magnifique mur de 3 pieds de béton, 9 pieds de clôture, qui va faire 2,5 de diamètre autour où est-ce que le congrès va se tenir.
We're going to be seeing a new wall. Quebec is a city with old city walls, but they're building a new wall with a 2.5 mile radius around the city, meter high concrete barricade with 3 feet 3 feet high concrete barricade and 9 feet high fencing.
Bien entendu, ce qu'on oublie de dire souvent, c'est qu'il y a des citoyens comme vous qui vont demeurer, que leur maison est à l'intérieur de ce périmètre. Ils vont devoir se munir d'une identification pour rentrer à la maison.
And there are a lot of people, just like you, who do live in that security perimeter, and they will be obliged to carry with them a special identity card, which will allow them to go in and out of that zone during the period of this summit.
Et naturellement, les amis, la famille ne pourront pas aller prendre une bière ou un repas le dimanche soir.
And of course, family members or friends will not be allowed to go into that zone to have a beer or dinner with family or whatever.
Ou une autre méthode encore, un peu plus radicale celle-ci, c'est vider une prison pour le sommet.
And another method that's being used in this repression and fear campaign is to empty out a prison just for you.
On parle ici de 600 places pour vous.
We're talking here of 600 places that'll be ready for you.
Et ici on a notre ministre de la sécurité publique qui commente le tout et qui dit si vous voulez la paix, préparez la guerre.
And here we have a citation from our public security minister in Quebec City who says if you want peace, prepare for war.
Heureusement à Québec, beaucoup de personnes ont un peu de sens d'humour et ont réagi en faisant un petit bordereau de réservation pour réserver sa place en prison.
But fortunately, in Quebec City, there are people with a sense of humor, and what we have here is application form so that you can reserve your place in prison.
Et si vous réservez avant le 1er avril, vous allez avoir un 10% de rabais.
And if you reserve before the 1st of April, you'll get a 10% discount.
On peut rire de tout ça, justement, dire qu'ils sont tout simplement cinglés, mais c'est pas tout. On parle aussi de... À chaque semaine, on nous parle d'armes, d'armes de répression comme du gaz lacrymogène, du poivre de Cayenne, de fusils électriques, toutes des méthodes pour contrôler les manifestants.
We can laugh about this stuff, but what we see is that practically every week there's articles or something about arms, things on the different arts of repression, the repressive arts, things like tear gas, or you know, talking about whether or not you can use tear gas or not, pepper spray or not, whether or not you can use electric guns. One thing he didn't mention, but
un que j'aime beaucoup, c'est le camion de pompiers. Ils ont dit, oh, on pourrait essayer un camion de pompiers pour arroser les manifestants, mais finalement, on va laisser faire parce que ça pourrait tuer des gens.
One of these news stories was about using water hoses from fire trucks to control demonstrators. And there was a news story about it, but finally they decided not to have it because, oh well, those water hoses can kill people, so we better not use it.
On pourrait dire justement que, bon, ça y est, il y a une analyse que j'aimerais faire de tout ça. Il y a deux principales façons d'analyser la situation. Premièrement, toute cette campagne vise à faire peur aux gens qui voudraient venir manifester.
There's an analysis I want to make about the situation, and I want to make an analysis on two levels. First, this repression and this media campaign is meant to prevent people and making people fearful of actually participating in demonstrations.
Et deuxièmement, c'est préparer psychologiquement la population ordinaire à accepter une répression massive des manifestants de la part des policiers.
And secondly, it's to psychologically prepare the general population of Quebec City to accept massive repression of activists on the part of police in Quebec City.
Cette analyse, peut-être vous pourriez dire, bon, encore des anarchistes qui sont paranoïaques, qui ont des théories de la conspiration comme dans les X-Files.
You might say that, oh, well, you know, here you got three anarchists here, all paranoid, doing their conspiracy theories from the X-Files.
Mais ici, j'ai André Paradis, qui est le directeur de la Ligue des droits et libertés au Québec.
But here is a quote from André Paradis, who's the head of the League for Rights and Freedoms in Quebec City, which is like the ACLU.
Qui commande l'arrestation de trois jeunes militants qui distribuaient des tracts de nature politique sur le trottoir.
Who's commenting on the arrest recently of three activists, young activists in Quebec City, who were handing out flyers in opposition to the summit.
Nous estimons que des gestes qui ont été posés par la police pour créer une mentalité d'état de siège préjudiciable à la liberté d'expression et de manifestation.
It's our view that these acts by the police are meant to create a siege mentality which is to the detriment of freedom of expression and the freedom to demonstrate.
Et que ce soit de Seattle ou à Davos, les manifestations étaient majoritairement pacifiques et que la principale cause de violence était les mesures démesurées employées par les policiers.
And whether it's in Seattle or whether it's in Davos in Switzerland, the vast majority of demonstrators were peaceful and it's the out of measure or excessive acts by the police that provoked violence.
Alors, je passerai tout de suite la parole. Juste une dernière chose, je vous ai parlé de toutes ces choses-là, mais je crois que le plus important, c'est ne pas avoir peur, continuer à agir et à faire ce que vous désirez faire.
I'm going to turn it over now, but just want to say one more thing, which is I don't think we should be afraid of this and that people should act and do what they desire.
Okay, we're going to move real quick into part two. Going around the table here, starting from my left, is Tony Del Plato, cook and writer, member of the Chefs Collaborative, and he's coordinator for the Ithaca Area Safe Food Campaign and the Organic Consumers Association. To his left is John Toddy, member of the Mid-State Labor Council, AFL-CIO. Next to John, Terrell Havercorn. She's worked with Thai sex workers' rights organization, as well as a regional Asia-Pacific women's organization called Asia-Pacific Forum on Women, Law, and Development. And then to her left, are you going to point to yourself, Gino? Gino Bush, community activist. He works with the Circle of Recovery, Thompson County Living Wage Coalition, and the Sharks working group that's working to get a halfway house in Ithaca, which we don't have yet. What we'll do is have each of you give your responses and then give some time for the CLAC panelists to respond, and then we'll open it up to the audience for open discussion, which I'll moderate. Okay.
Now we have people who are older than me here, which I'm happy to say. There's many people about my age, and there's many young people, and I think that's what this is all about. If we're going to move toward liberation, we need to link the generations. One of the things that I've tried to come to terms with is how are we part of the colonialization of the earth, whether you go back 500 years or whether we go back to World War II 50 years ago, we can see the steady progression of the colonial mentality. How do we regain the liberation is one of the main questions. How do we gain liberation? And I deal with food and biotechnology, and this colonialization continues through the patenting of not just food and seed, but the patenting of genes. We can see the continued commodification. Canada is linked very closely with the United States in the colonization of genetic materials, seeds, and food. Many of us are alienated here. We may have many privileges, but we're alienated from the land. We're alienated from the people who produce the food. I know for certain that there's just one farmer here, but I want people here to know that as of the last U.S. Census, farming is no longer an occupation listed on the U.S. Census. Sure, less than 2 million people perhaps may be farming in the United States. If we're going to gain liberation, we need to regain the connection to the farmers. We're all producers on some level, and we're all certainly consumers. None of you spoke much about food and the connections to the land. I was wondering if you could just bring us up to date on some of those issues that you face there, because here we not only struggle with these issues locally because we have Cornell University, but Cornell is the center of international activity. We're blessed and burdened and cursed by all of this, and I think it's important that we see these links, because many of us are constantly moving. Okay, thank you.
Welcome, sisters and brothers. We in the labor movement are big on using that term, so I'll just use it. When we come to consider what the American capitalists are investing in China with the idea of crushing out the unions of America, it is time for us to wake from our slumber. It is not alone in China they are doing this, but across our borders in Mexico. That's from a speech Mother Jones made in 1910 to the United Mine Workers. I think it's quite relevant today. Nothing has changed in 90 or 100 years since that was made. In the area of labor markets, there is a high road of productive efficiency and a low road. Regulations that compel decent wages and working conditions are a stimulus to technical progress. The employer who has masses of desperate workers at his disposal has little incentive to innovate. The ability of industry to outsource production to areas of the world with little or no social or environmental regulation undercuts political decisions to foster a decent workplace that reflects a century of democratic struggle. Ithaca, New York, or Sao Paulo, Brazil, the union struggle is the same. One of my questions for you is the involvement of the labor movement. I know through recent conferences I've been to in Philadelphia and New York, that these issues are very important to the labor movement. It's not just an American labor movement, it's an international labor movement. There's struggles of the workers throughout the world are a high priority for us in the labor movement. And I personally believe union membership is very important to this struggle because it gives a voice to a lot of workers, and we're all workers. With union membership, it gives a lot of power in different localities throughout the world to the workers when they're members of unions. You know, when there's a strong union presence, it puts companies on notice that you can't get away with the crap that you used to get away with. What I would like to know is with this, again, going on up in Quebec, what's the presence of the Canadian labor unions in this? And well, actually, it's one of my own because the Teamsters are, I'm with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, and it's an international union, and we are in Canada.
I moved to Ithaca last August, but for the year preceding that, I lived in Northern Thailand and worked with a Thai grassroots sex workers' rights organization called Empower. Actually, that's their English name. And this work came out of a concern that I had with transnational or global organizing around sex workers' rights, and in particular, some of the problematic and often exoticizing ways that sex workers were represented, not only in the media, but also by academics and activists sort of all over the world who claimed or presumed to be in solidarity with them. I also went to Thailand very concerned with what it means to work across national borders and what it means to be working in solidarity with women located very differently within and by racialized global capitalist processes, and even more specifically, what it meant for me as a white North American woman to be working with Thai sex workers in their struggle, which in so many ways is also my struggle. And I felt and still continue to feel like transnational solidarity is crucial to addressing so many of the problems created by sort of increasing globalization, increasing neoliberalism, increasing neoimperialism. And yet precisely those processes make organizing fraught with difficulty because the organizing is happening in the same context as all of the specific forms of oppression which come out of those processes. It's happening within the same context of polarizing difference within. And I guess that there's sort of two questions which I want to raise, or two points which I want to raise. And first is that this organization which I worked with, which is a Thai grassroots group, which is actually in three different Thai cities, which does kind of a range of things. It's part crisis center for sex workers who have recently been diagnosed with HIV. It's part a drop-in center for sex workers to come hang out, part a place for women who work in sex tourism to come learn sexual negotiation-focused English, German, and Japanese. We were part of organizing in Thailand last year around the UN Conference on Trade and Development and the Asian Development Bank. And in particular, the sort of the organizing around the Asian Development Bank and our participation as a grassroots Thai group in organizing against it seems particularly relevant to questions of what it means for local grassroots groups to be responding to the FTAA, to the WTO, to whatever, because like the Asian Development Bank and the work which we did around it, the Asian Development Bank is sort of, and this is not a very academic definition, but it's kind of like a smaller regional international monetary fund. They support a lot of projects within the Asian Pacific region, including, in particular, in Thailand, this really problematic dam project in northeastern Thailand that displaced thousands of villagers. Also a lot of problematic state enterprise projects where they were privatizing state enterprises. But the main issue around their annual meeting last year was this dam in northeastern Thailand. And so as a sex workers' rights group in Thailand, we felt like it was incredibly critical for us to be part of the protests around the ADB. They were having their annual meeting in our city, and there were about 10,000 activists that came, mostly from Thailand, but also from Laos and Cambodia, and actually from all over the world. And so you're thinking, dams, sex workers, like what's the connection? And there isn't a direct connection. The answer is simply that the struggle of sex workers, who are an incredibly marginalized group, not only in Thailand, but also globally, is inextricably bound up with the struggle of people who are displaced by large development projects. And we never sort of could map a direct connection of what the connection between sex workers and dams was, but we knew it was really important for us to be there. And in particular, for us to be there as sex workers and their allies. I wasn't. And my second point is less concrete and sort of tries to address the question of sustaining these struggles. Because I've been thinking since I've lived in Ithaca and been part of the Sharks, and in particular sort of since being back in the United States and starting school, which is maybe more the cause of it, that I'm not really sure how to create the same energizing feeling here that I really felt in the work I was doing last year. And so I thought, okay, what are the differences between these two kinds of work and where I'm located in it? And I realized, and this is more a comment sort of on me than on local organizing in the United States, I would think, but that I felt so connected to what I was doing last year because we weren't only sharing political work. Like with the women that I worked with, we were sharing so much more. We were sharing sort of our lives in very intimate ways, in the sense that as a community, if a woman died from AIDS, all of us went to her funeral. I guess that's sort of one example, and we shared and made food together. If someone had a problem, either financially or because they had to work and they didn't have someone to watch their children, we took care of their children. We weren't simply working together because we were all united around the goal of sex workers' rights or dismantling the capitalist economy. And increasingly, I think this kind of support, which goes beyond any kind of material political reason, is really just incredibly crucial, both to sustain our work personally, but also, I think in some way, although I can't really make it any more concrete, it's really important for sustaining our movements as well.
I'm glad you folks came, and as you can see, there's very few minorities in this audience. Through my experiences, my learning experiences since I've been involved with the Sharks, which has been very short term, as one of the few minorities in the Sharks, coming to understand what these issues is about has been very difficult and painful for me. It hasn't been painful because of what the experience is about. It's been painful because of the experiences that I've had to endure while in the Sharks. So my question to you folks is the inclusiveness of all people to get involved in these issues. I can't get involved in these issues because I come from a culture that is so widely diverse and divided until I can't even get myself together. And I speak with many, many people on a daily basis who have no idea what's going on with these issues. People that are recovering from drugs and alcohol, people that are coming out of prisons and jails, people who are just merely subsisting, people who are living on food stamps, people who, I just had a gentleman in here this evening that just got evicted tonight, has nowhere to live. These are the type of things that I have to deal with. And so when I'm asked to get involved with issues on a global level, it's very difficult for me to relate to that because look what's happening locally, which is nothing in this community to bring about positive change in the most enlightened city in the United States, which is totally, totally mythical, as we all know. So I'm glad you folks came here tonight. You know, you talk about issues, capitalism, the World Bank, monetary funds, and this and that. I don't give a damn about none of that, because in my life, that doesn't affect me in the way that it affects people that come from privilege, which is most of you folks out here. So when you talk to people that come from a very poor background, people who have been discriminated against all their lives, people who have to deal with racism on a daily basis, we cannot relate to this. But I tell you this much, I'm trying to learn, and I'm trying to understand, and my mind is open. And I do want to understand what's going on, because I do know that what goes on with this issue affects everybody in the world. But as I said, I'd like to know, and I'd like to see this done in a more simplified manner so that people who are not on the upper level of academia could understand what's going on. You know, you have to talk in very simple terms if you want to include other people. I heard a lot of that was said this evening, and I didn't understand a damn thing. I didn't know what y'all was talking about. That's because I don't have the knowledge and the understanding about what's being said here tonight. And so you are looking at a man here tonight whose great-grandmother was hung in Detroit, and a sign was hung where she was hung, said a nigger was hung here today. You were looking at a man who was on death row. You were looking at a man who spent 11 years in prison. You were looking at a man who was shot 3 times by a white man because he didn't want me to touch his wife when I was a medic. And now you want me to get involved in this. Well, what about my pain? What about my suffering? What about all the things I've had to endure? What about all the injustices that I've had to go through? And I'm just one of many. And it's not just about black. It's about the indigenous people in this country, the Asian people in this country, all people of color who have had to suffer. And it's about classism, too, the poor people. And the people who don't earn a wage, a livable wage in America. I'm concerned about that, and that covers everybody. So my question to you good folks from Quebec is, do you have any type of solution to that question? Is how can we get people from all backgrounds and all ethnicities to get involved in this kind of stuff? Thank you.
Okay, so I know all of our panelists have asked our caravan visitors to give us all the solutions, but I hope that, you know, but maybe we could also in discussion sort of try to open up what would be some of the solutions we'd come up with together, because, you know, this is about how we're trying to make that connection with the global and the local here as well.
I'm going to respond to the questions in the reverse order that they were given. So what I want to say is, first of all, I don't think any of us are here to give you solutions. Maybe we're here to maybe talk about how we can do those solutions. And I think one way to respond to some of these, well, all the questions is maybe give direct examples of some organizing that's happening in Montreal, and maybe, you know, you can see some parallels. First of all, I agree with practically everything that Gino was saying, and I was trying to address that in my remarks as well about this, you know, there's more than one movement, and you were saying that you're trying to learn. I think people in the anti-globalization movement should actually be trying to learn about other struggles and what's happening and expand that. And I was trying to address some of those issues, such as, you know, the prison industrial complex, political prisoners, poverty issues. And you're right about lack of representation. And as a friend of mine used to say, you don't have to go to a protest to have white men tell you what to do. And it seems that a lot of these protests are about, you know, going somewhere to have white men tell you what to do. I want to talk about something called Colors of Resistance. It's a network that came together after Seattle. An informal network, and one of the main problems is it's sort of based on the internet and stuff, but what it is, it's activists of color, a lot of whom read something written after Seattle called Where Were the People of Color in Seattle? That article, by the way, talked about a lot of the things that you talked about. It was in Color Lines. And we're trying to deal with a lot of these issues, and I guess one thing we've pinpointed for us that's important is community organizing based somewhere where there's a reality, like somebody getting evicted, or a lot of the realities that you all talked about. So that's where we're coming from. And to give one example in Montreal, and this applies as well to what Terrell was saying, because women of color get affected in very specific ways. There's a woman in Montreal who's under threat of deportation. Her name is Melka Salvador, right? Women such as Melka come over under a program called the Live-In Caregiver Program. They do those jobs I was saying before that white people don't want to do. They don't have any rights. They get treated very poorly, and they're in very vulnerable situations because they have no rights. They can be sexually harassed. Melka's under threat of deportation now because she got pregnant. You know, the big crime of getting pregnant. So we feel it's really important that we prioritize that issue, and it's not about making some like link, you know, oh, this has to do with the FTAA. No, this is globalization in our face. People getting evicted, that's in your face. So we're prioritizing that, and you know that's just one small example. And this network is trying to make sure that these issues are on the agenda, not somehow like a token issue, right? Trying to put some color on the movement, you know. So some of the issues we're trying to promote in our teach-ins and these events is actually giving space to these issues, talking about the prison industrial complex, talking about social marginalization, and expanding the scope of what. What's taken for the important issues. And there is some successes. One, for example, is the fact that a group that does a lot of what it seems like you're doing here, which is, you know, frontline, I don't know what to call it, anti-poverty work. There are groups who do that in Ontario and in Quebec that we're making links with in a real way. For example, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. I'm not saying they're all coming to Quebec and dropping everything, but there's a sense that there's a bigger struggle here and there's a lot of linking up to do, but in a real way. It's not about simply inviting people in, you know, at the last minute after you've made all the decisions, but actually together constructing what those things are. So, Terrell, I mentioned things about sex workers, and I want to give an example from Montreal again. I gave the Melka Salvador example, a woman who's under threat of deportation. And by the way, all these issues are issues which members of the anti-capitalist convergence are actually working on. We're a convergence of struggles that already exist. We're not pretending like we're starting something new. When we say it didn't start in Seattle, it's because there are people who went, you know, before us who set all this groundwork for us. So there's a group in Montreal called Stella, which represents sex workers. And in Montreal, like in every city, there's gentrification going on. You know, there's areas of the city that used to be places that you can live for relatively cheap, you know, and they're being turned into these tourist yuppie paradises, condominiums, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this one area of Montreal where there are prostitutes, sex workers. And as it so happens, sex workers are some of the first targets. They're easily, you know, they're already socially marginalized. They're already, there's all this social baggage that people aim against sex workers for a variety of reasons. It's sexist and all of that. So they were targeted because Stella had the gall to propose harm reduction instead of simply criminalizing prostitutes. It also applies to the drug war, by the way. We can apply this to the drug war, but I'm applying it to prostitutes. So they proposed something called the Project Pilot, which was meant to not put prostitutes in jail, but to actually give them basic education. And by the way, this program was proposed by prostitutes themselves, which infuriated a lot of people because they were getting organized. But basic AIDS education and education around sexual diseases, and to say to the cops, lay off. Don't arrest people, but deal with harm reduction. Well, Stella and this project pilot got attacked viciously. It was purely fascistic. There were community meetings full to the rafters, and they were sort of riled up by people in the community who, you know, these yuppie business owners. People would come with baseball bats and say, you know, if these women are doing what they're saying, we're going to go beat them up, playing on a lot of fears. There were signs up at the rallies that said less condoms and more condos, things like that. So we organized a response. This was just this past summer, and a lot of the people involved in CLAC were part of this response. They organized a rally for their kids in the neighborhood, and we said, well, basically, we said, fuck, you know, prostitutes have kids too, their mothers as well, they're part of our neighborhood, whose neighborhood are you talking about? And we organized a counter-demonstration. And actually, our counter-demonstration had twice as many people as their actual demonstration. They were using kids in a very, very disgusting way, you know, having them hold up their placards and stuff. We were saying, it's our neighborhood. We were taking their slogans and turning it around on them. We were saying, you know, more condoms, less condos, you know, like giving condoms to people and letting them have sexual awareness. More sex, less duplexes. But again, that's a frontline struggle. And the way they were treated was very bad. I mean, they'd have like dead animals on their doorstep of their office, etc. So going to John, talking about labor. I don't have an example from Montreal, but I have an example from Sudbury, Ontario, which is in northern Ontario. It's a mining town. And we visited Sudbury, Ontario during our last caravan. And there's an epic strike going on there right now, which really brings these issues together at a mining company called Falconbridge in Ontario. And the people from Kingston can talk about that. They have flyers in the back. There's a premier called Mike Harris who patterns himself on right-wing American governors like Engler or Pataki or, you know, people like that. So they brought in a lot of repressive labor laws. And then at the same time that this is happening voluntarily by the governments, you know, repressive labor laws, there's this globalization agenda going on. This company, Falconbridge, is demanding of its workers that they not accept certain benefits, and they have fewer health stewards. So it's not even an issue in Sudbury of more higher pay or more benefits. It's an issue of having health stewards and keeping the benefits that they fought for long ago, right? Because these struggles were really profound back in the day. You know, when, I mean, this whole idea of violence and nonviolence, I don't know if anyone's ever been to the picket line, but, you know, they aren't having any debates over how they're going to protect their jobs. And The strikers at Falconbridge, we visited them in October. They had Christmas trees up because they knew they were going to be there past December. And the strike's going on until now. There's actually been riot police that have come in to deal with protesters. Because what's happened is there's a no-go zone, and the mine is still functioning. Because in Mike Harris's Ontario, you're allowed to have replacement workers. Well, that's right. As I was about to say that. I run, if we're honest about it, they're scabs. But they have replacement workers or scabs that come in. Plus, the workers don't have the basic rights they have to fight for their jobs anymore. And, I mean, when we visited the picket line, again, it's really stark. It's not in terms of, you know, Chapter 11 or this and that. It's about protecting our jobs. And actually, the people on the picket line there, we were there for 2 days, they weren't talking about our jobs going away to, you know, wherever. They're saying, you know, we're in the same boat as the miners in Chile who this company is using as blackmail against these workers. They mine nickel. And it's processed and stuff, but it's actually the last process of it is in Norway. And there's some interesting things in relation to that, because in Norway, they're refusing to unload the scab nickel, which is the first time that you have this sort of internationalization, right? Because usually you do solidarity within the country. But in Norway, they're saying, no, we're not going to unload your scab nickel.
Can I just comment on that?
Yep.
We're fighting multinational corporations. We have to have a multinational labor movement.
I mean, just to finish this example off, like we're up there and I know there's, I mean, we've said this right from the very beginning. We're not here to tell people to come to Quebec. We're trying to base struggles and what's happening locally. But we're up in Sudbury, and we're some people from Quebec, and we're wondering, so maybe there's a connection. And as it so happens, Falconbridge is owned by a company called Noranda, which is a Quebec company. This scab nickel takes trains to Montreal and then to Quebec City before it goes to Norway, Quebec City. So I'm asking them, what do you want done to this nickel here, right? And like, you want us to like do a nickel tea party kind of thing where you just dump it in the water and stuff? And they're like, well, you know, the nickel can just be lost. And it was a really radicalizing experience for us, right? Because we're thinking like, well, it's all the people doing the protests that are radicalizing other people, but it's a radicalizing experience for us because there was no fear of direct action, any of that, despite the fact that they can be jailed in Mike Harris's Ontario for what's happening. So just wanted to mention that example. And then finally, Tony, about food. I have one example from Montreal, but I just wanted to mention that in the FTAA, two of the negotiating groups are agriculture, and just to quote from it, the objectives of market access shall apply to agriculture, and that any trade distorting practices must be eliminated. And, you know, as I mentioned, those trade distorting practices, that language means regulations and laws that are meant to make sure that our food is healthy. There's also another group called intellectual property rights. That's in the FTAA, which is to lend effective protection to intellectual property rights such as foods, life forms, and drug patents. So it's all in there, and I'm sure you knew about it. And I just wanted to say as well, we talk about colonialism and stuff. I remember a phrase, I forget who said it, but genetically modified foods are like the modern day gunships, right? 200 years ago, they go in to countries, they still do, but 200 years ago, they go into countries with gunships and armies. Today, they force feed, literally food, genetically modified food, toxic food, Franken food, whatever you want to call it, down people's throats in a very disgusting way, especially in the South, where, you know, you can give all the examples. I mean, there's a table back there with a lot of examples where they're patenting foods that people have grown for generations, and now somehow some company in the U.S., in St. Louis, like Monsanto, or a lot of these professors here at Cornell are, you know, patenting this stuff that people have grown for generations. And I guess I've given examples, so I have to give you an example too. In Montreal, there's a very strong group working on biotech issues like everywhere. And what they've done, and I'm pretty sure people have done it here as well, is they go into stores because labeling is not allowed. Supposedly this is about free trade and people should be informed and all that, but they don't allow labeling of food products. So people have gone in and actually label the foods.
Well, you see, the U.S. government is saying that they want voluntary labeling. So what I and other people are involved with is simply encouraging everyone here to get labeled and voluntarily label those foods that we know are genetically modified.
Exactly.
Go into our supermarkets and say, this is genetically modified. Yeah. These are the kind of things that are happening. So we're actually taking the government seriously. I mean, as you know, it's pretty outrageous. The reason why they don't want labeling is that people won't buy it.
So people have been doing that, voluntary labeling, and they get arrested when they voluntarily label. One person did, and there's currently a strong support campaign around it, but around this issue as well. So as you can imagine, as Helen was mentioning before, they're selling it in different ways, right? And I have here the official packet that the Summit of the Americas puts out, and inside of it you have nice brochures with, you know, nice white faces, with nice brown faces, all working together to make the world a better place. These brochures, you know, with these glossy images, are what I call development pornography. But this one in particular has a lead article called "The Miracles and Mutations of Maize or Corn." And you have nice images here of idyllic indigenous farmers growing corn like they've grown corn for generations. But the article, I mean, I'll just read the lead of the article. It says, "Since pre-Columbian times, the versatile corn plant has been the object of experimentation and genetic manipulation with far-reaching consequences." And the article is, of course, accompanied by these nice photos, and this is all part of the Summit of the Americas official package. But the article is not about how they've been growing corn for generations in a sustainable way, but about how it just fits in within a continuum from indigenous farmers to Monsanto and Cargo growing genetically modified corn. That's how they're selling it, in this kind of imagery, which is, like I said, it's development pornography, and you have to have a critical view to really decipher it, and that's what they're selling to us with the summit.
My name is Faye Ugakis. I'm an activist here in Ithaca. I'm very concerned about what's going to happen in Quebec. And the reason is, what's about to happen in Quebec is extremely important. What we did in Seattle was extremely important. But what happened in Seattle was a group of people turned violent. And that violence, which some people justify, has taken the airtime, has basically taken away from the many issues and the many activists that went in peace to Seattle. When I saw the media coverage of it, I was horrified. I was horrified to see activists being pulled and their hairs pulled or beaten. No, I don't want that, and it shouldn't be tolerated. And I don't know what's going to happen in Quebec. And I'm afraid for the people that are going to go and protest in peace. And what, you know, will there be another group like there was in Seattle that's going to rip everything apart and have, excuse me, I'm referring to the group of people that wanted to remain anonymous, who busted windows and ruined property. My concern here is that you are going to silence the messages that you're all talking about if that violence continues.
One point that I would like to begin with is, I think that there's a very clear link between food and at least two other things that we should be concerned with. And those are domestically the prison industrial complex, and overseas things like sweatshops. I think that as we've seen the decline of agriculture here, that we've seen more and more rural towns who are so desperate for jobs that they turn to things like jail. You know, they build jails as the only way to keep their economies afloat. And yet, all the land in the developing world is being used to grow cash crops, particularly meat, that is then sent here. My plea, I guess, is just to state how important it is that we support local farmers and eat food grown as close to where we live as we can, and to try to eat as much of a plant-based diet as we can. Thank you.
Matt, I know you're going to make a sort of a longish comment. Can we have a break here to have the panels try to respond to some of those questions? Or?
Okay, well, on the first comment...
Briefly.
Okay. There will be a lot of armed mass people violent people coming to Quebec City. They're called the cops. It's going to be a lot of them. And I do appreciate where you're coming from, but we have to be really careful not to be honest to the history of what happened. The violence in Seattle started like hours before anybody bashed up any stores, first of all. Even being nonviolent, as the people were, didn't necessarily, you know, prevent the police from being very violent. We can disagree on tactics, and we do. I mean, we do. I mean, I would hate that we all agree, you know, sit here and agree on what given tactic is right or isn't right. But it's generally agreed that the targeted property violence by the Black Bloc, they have a name, they put out a communique. Behind those masks, you have people who are probably sitting in this room and who work on different projects and the same progressive projects that people work on here. People generally agree that targeted property violence against McDonald's, et cetera, is not anywhere near the level of violence that's perpetuated by the state. And finally, finally, CLAC and CASA are based on a respect for diversity of tactics. That doesn't mean anything goes. That means our two principal considerations are safety and security and solidarity. By safety and security, we mean that people shouldn't be in situations that they don't want to be in as much as possible, because as I said before, people get into situations when they don't, it's not their choice, right? Because of poverty, because of racism. But insofar as you're going to be participating in actions, you shouldn't be in situations you don't want to be in. And we're trying to encourage and set up a dynamic whereby people can be safe and secure. Most people have absolutely no inclination to be arrested. That's a very healthy instinct. We're trying to set up spaces so that doesn't happen. There are people who are interested in getting involved in blockades and nonviolent actions, and that should happen. That should be facilitated. And there are people who are quite angry, and sometimes they're not angry, but they believe in other tactics, and they want to force the issue, and that should happen with respect of those tactics and making sure that people are secure and safe, whatever they may be doing. But the other part of that is solidarity. And that is, we might disagree on a given tactic at a given point in time, but we should not be denouncing and sort of making this really false distinction between good protesters, you know, white middle class people who say, we're nonviolent, how about you, and don't deserve to be arrested but are volunteering to offer themselves up for arrest, or the bad protesters who might mask up. Who...
I'm sorry, I wasn't saying that.
What I'm saying...
And I'll tell you something, from what I saw in Seattle, the protesters...
Right.
Faye, he's addressing your comment.
But what I'm saying, though, is that I think your comments are creating that dynamic, because people disagreed with given tactics, but they definitely weren't trying to pin the blame on the Black Bloc. The blame should be pinned on the organization, the WTO, and the police that acted violently. And I think you're playing into some very dangerous dynamics. And I mean, speaking on behalf of CASA and CLAC, that's exactly what we want to avoid by respecting a diversity of tactics.
There's some people here from Kingston who needs to make an announcement about some of the border actions against the FTA that we're going to go on. If Matt, you could take a couple of minutes to do that. Short. I'm sorry about time.
I'll be as short as possible. I wanted to tell people here about an action that is being organized by activists across Ontario that was inspired in part by the exciting actions taken by Indigenous people both in Ecuador and in Bolivia, where they shut down highways. We're going to develop that idea a little bit and take all the people who are headed towards Quebec City on the main highway in Ontario, the 401, it's the NAFTA Free Trade Corridor, and slow everything right down and travel as slowly as we can towards Quebec. And along the way, we'll stop at different borders that are coming from the United States. Now, we're working with OCAP, which is the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. Their main constituency are homeless people. We have worked right from the start with the Mohawk Nation and with a bunch of people in New York City who are working in part with the immigrant organizations there. This is like it's an action organized by people who have much larger concerns. One of the focuses is trying to look at our own provincial government that Jaggi had mentioned earlier, which was Mike Harris, and say, look, when they change the laws to make it easier to evict people, that's free trade. Do you know, when they privatize people's water, that's free trade. And it affects all of us. So we're trying to make those links. We've made links with people in Toronto and in Montreal and in Cornwall. All of those places are farther away than Ithaca is. And for some reason, there's a a boundary that has been created. You know, it's not a real boundary. You know, some governments have made it up. We don't have to pay attention to that. That's one of the points of the day. So we'd like to work with the people from Ithaca and across New York State. If you're not going to Buffalo to participate in a border action there, we're saying this is an opportunity to organize regionally, talk with the different people in your own city and get them involved. And allows you to organize both regionally and, if you want to, continue on to Quebec for all the fun stuff that's going to happen there.
Thanks, Matt. I'm really sorry that time ran out so short. It wasn't just about trying to represent different issues. It was about trying to figure out different ways in which we can make them connect here. So thanks a lot. Thanks.
You've been listening to a community forum on the FTAA Summit of the Americas that will take place in Quebec City next April. If you want to learn more about the FTAA and how to fight it, you can get that info at the A20 website at www.a20.org. That's the letter A, the numeral 2, the numeral 0, www.a20.org. Reconsider is a Syracuse-based organization that educates the public on alternatives for a sane and intelligent approach to the issue of drugs and drug use, namely, treating presently illegal drugs the same way that we treat presently legal drugs, like alcohol. You're invited to hear a debate between Michael Runa of Reconsider and drug warrior Melvin Levitsky of the Maxwell School of Public Affairs at Syracuse University, who is a former Assistant Secretary of State from the Daddy Bush administration. On March 5th at 4 p.m. at the Maxwell School Auditorium at Syracuse University, these two will go mano a mano on the issue of the drug war. The event is sponsored by the student chapter of the ACLU and is free and open to the public. You can call Syracuse University for directions at area code 315-443-1870. That's 443-1870 in the 315 area code.
If you have an event you'd like us to announce or an issue you'd like us to cover on the program, you can contact us at our website at www.radioforall.org/unwelcome. That's radio, the number 4, ALL.org/unwelcome. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Unwelcome Guests is produced by Chris Sturr, Jesse Lind, Lynn Gary, and Sean Ewald. We are solely responsible for its content.
Be my end, for my guns and my saddle will always be filled by unwelcome.